going on? This is Toki and Noah, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action. They're on the floor, and they're ready to score, so let the game begin.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. We got a very special edition today with the great basketball historian Tim Gallagher is back on the show. Tim, it's so good to have you back, and I cannot wait to talk some basketball with you, brother.
Well, same here, Fred. It's been a long time. Kind of that first quarter of the year was just kind of lost, although I've been certainly following the game and getting to some games and lots of observations, so glad to reconnect, and certainly been listening to what you've put out on the Bullseye and keeping track of as much as I can. So good to connect again.
So obviously a lot to talk about, and let's hit the ground running with a little NCAA talk. What a tournament, fantastic tournament with Loyola making the run and Villanova winning it all. And I felt Villanova was the best team I've seen all year. I saw that very early in the tournament with the way that team could hit the three. And I've fallen in love with Mikal Bridges. So a couple of things to talk about. Let's get your general impressions on the tournament. And then let's get your general impressions on Villanova. And finally, Mr. Mikal Bridges.
Sure. Well, it's such a great couple of weeks of the year, the tournament. And it's kind of a sad, sad day when it's finally over, because just the excitement of those first couple of weeks. And firstly, especially those first 4 days of the tournament, I think that's my favorite, because you still get some big upsets and just game after game. So
none bigger this year. None bigger this year with Virginia losing. Unbelievable.
Right, yeah. Maryland, Baltimore County, who would have ever thought it? And even though one of Virginia's key players was hurt, that, you know, we've seen things like that happen before, and there's never been a 16 takedown of one. So something like that was great. Obviously, there in Chicago, you got to enjoy Loyola's run, which was just fun to see. How could you not like the way that team played? Just their togetherness and unselfishness, and obviously Sister Jean, and then the program having some history, having won in 1963, but it'd been a long, long time since they've really been on the national map. So a lot of fun things about that. I agree with you on Villanova, although in my bracket, which was dismantled pretty early on with my selections, but there were a couple things about Villanova that really struck me during the season. And one was when they went on the road and beat Xavier, who also was the number one seed in the tournament and a very, very good team, although they were upset by Florida State. But I don't know the exact score, but I just remember being stunned and having to do a double take at the way Villanova dismantled Xavier at Xavier. So that was one point in the season that I thought, wow, these guys must be pretty tough, because you just don't go into Xavier and wallop them. Then I happened to see West Virginia play twice. I got to the 6 tournament games here in San Diego, so we had a Friday-Sunday matchup here, and got to see West Virginia up close and personal, and what a tough team they are in every sense of the word, physically, depth. Huggins is a no-nonsense guy. Everybody buys in. But the way Villanova relatively easily handled West Virginia also made me appreciate how good they must be, because West Virginia is very similar in terms of toughness, but just not the skill level of the Villanova players. When I say skill level, I mean offensive shooting abilities and versatility and depth, and obviously that carried Villanova all the way to the championship. So those couple of moments really made me appreciate how good Villanova could be or was going to be, and so I wasn't really that surprised. And you know, and I like Michigan. I love Coach Beilein and the way he runs things. And one of our occasional guests here on the podcast, Grant Goodstein, is a former student manager and analytics coordinator there. So through Grant, I stay really connected to how Michigan plays throughout the season. They actually had a player from my high school in Kettering, Ohio. Jerron Simmons is the backup point guard. So kind of followed what was going on with him as well. But I thought they really overachieved and got some fortunate breaks in their bracket to get as far as they did. No disrespect to Michigan, but I just don't think they had anywhere near the firepower of a Villanova. And obviously that showed in the championship game. And, you know, Wagner's a nice player. Matthews, who's a Chicago kid's a very nice player. But really after those two, I don't know. I don't think any of those other guys are pros. And and so credit to them for getting that far. And it shows you the kind of preparation and execution and just togetherness that a program like Michigan has as well will carry you a long way.
So Mikal Bridges has been a pretty hot topic the last few days. I'm on the side of I love the kid. And it seems like to me the only thing that – one of the few things he's discounted about is his age. He's 21. He's going to be 22 at the end of August. You know, by that logic, the Bulls should have never drafted Jimmy Butler or Taj Gibson. They were both, I think, older when they were drafted. I may be wrong on that. But if I look at this kid, here's a kid who shot 29% from three as a freshman. And in 2 years, his junior year, he shot 43%. He went, I think it was 29, 39, 43. The amount of work you have to put in to make that kind of improvement at the three-point line is just immense. And it says a lot about the kid, who when he went to Villanova was basically known as like a rim rocker. I love his I love his length. He's got a 7'2 wingspan. I see, when I watch him play, I actually see, you know, I know this is people are going to get all over me about this, but he's got a similarities to Scottie Pippen in his build and the way he plays, how hard he plays defensively. I'm not saying he's ever going to approach Scottie. Everybody calm down, but I really like the kid. What is your take on Mikal Bridges?
Yes, I really like him as well, and I know he's been in the discussion in some of the mock drafts early on. And I think there was one play in that championship game that really stood out for me, and it was a 2-on-4 fast break where Dante DiVincenzo was bringing it down the right wing, and most logic would say, okay, it's a 2-on-4 break. You've got a pretty comfortable lead. Just, you know, just get something, you know, set in the offense. And he dished it back to Bridges, who pulled up for a three, just feeling it, and hit that shot. And right there, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it, right? When you have that kind of confidence and talent, it's exciting to see. So, yeah, I really like what I see of him. And he's a player, if he comes out, which I haven't heard that he's declared yet, but you would think he probably would. Although with Villanova, you know, the one other refreshing thing about their program is those guys all seem to have really bought into the college basketball experience. And since we've last talked, there's been even more and more discussion about just kind of the dysfunction, I guess you'd say, between college basketball and recruiting and agents and the NBA and the G League and overseas, and what kind of model and program is going to be right going forward, which I don't know who has the answer and how that's going to be worked out. But it was really refreshing to see a program like Villanova where all those guys were certainly in the moment. And even player of the year like Jalen Brunson, who's a Chicago area kid, obviously, just when he was not in the game and on the bench, he was almost coaching the team, right? You could just see how it certainly looked like he was looking ahead that, okay, how soon can I declare and put my name in the hat for the draft, right? It just it was refreshing to see on a lot of those guys. You know, really any of those Villanova players would be an asset to, you know, well, not all of them are NBA talents, but I think there's, you know, a handful of them that will be or could be. It's just hard to project, but Bridges is right there, and I'd love to see Brunson as well. Maybe it's certainly crossed my mind for the Bulls' second pick in the first round that someone like him could be available. I question a little bit about his size, but boy, his leadership and toughness and his winning track record is going to be hard to pass up, and it would be cool to have another player with Chicago ties too on the Bulls roster.
Yeah, I think Brunson's, you know, he's a smart player. He'll max out as a backup point guard in the NBA. I don't ever see him becoming like a starter or an all-star, but I am really intrigued by Bridges because, number one, that improvement is huge to me. It shows, you know, like I said, a really good work ethic. And people have kind of like, I've heard a couple people kind of try to diminish him as, oh, he's a 3-and-D guy. And I'm like, well, isn't that the modern NBA? Isn't that what it's all about? Is having a 6'7" guy on the perimeter who can hit threes and play D? I mean, isn't that imperative to winning? You know, I just thinking about him and Dunn on the perimeter, I mean, that's a very good defensive combo right there to shut down whatever any opposition is bringing on the perimeter. I really like it. The more I think about it, the more excited I am. You know, I was higher on Miles Bridges. I think Miles has more physical gifts, more talent probably, and probably a higher ceiling, but he's not at Mikal's level right now. Mikal is a better player. Now he's 2 years older. I understand that, but you know, people act like it's easy to make that kind of jump. It's not. To go from 29 to 43 is not an easy thing to do. So I just don't – I think he's got a much higher ceiling than people are giving him credit for, and I think he's going to be significantly better than other players who are projected to go ahead of him, you know, like a Mo Bamba or even a Trae Young who are projected to go ahead of him. I think Bridges will have a significantly better pro career.
Well, and I do like him more than, say, the other players that are being projected around where the Bulls pick would be. And we'll get to this, I'm sure, in a minute, as well as on subsequent podcasts, but where my expectations are going to be for the Bulls next year. And, you know, just a little hint of that is I expect a leap almost like what Philadelphia did this year. And in terms of once the Bulls settle in on the lineup and play to win and aren't doing this shuffle back and forth of, are we going to try to win here? Are we going to try to tank? Are we going to, it's really been hard to even follow what lineup they're going to put on the floor. But in general, I've seen enough of the young players and how they've developed and their potential. And then you add a few pieces either through free agency, sort of like how Philadelphia did with Redick, add a guy like a Mikal Bridges. And I think you're in business for a, 45-plus win season. If Philly could do it, I think the young talent on the Bulls has shown enough that isn't an unrealistic expectation.
I agree, too. I mean, obviously Philly added, Simmons, who's fantastic, and Embiid had a little bit more consistency playing this year. But I agree. I think the Bulls can make – they've been trying to lose for the vast majority of the season. So and they're backing into 27 wins. Maybe 26, 27, 28. Who knows where they end up? So I am a big believer in the Bulls next year. I think they can win 44 to 47, depending on who they draft and who they sign. But I love the potential setup if they get like a Bridges at the three, and you start a Dunn, Levine, Bridges, Markin, and Lopez with Valentine, Holiday. Coming off the bench, Portis. Are you kidding me? That's a good team and a good bench. So
I agree. I don't think any of that is looking at rose-colored glasses as Bulls fans or anything. I think that is very realistic. Back to Bridges for a second, Mikal Bridges I'm talking about. And I'm a big Miles Bridges fan too, and I'm a huge Michael Porter Jr. fan, even though he finally came back at the end of the season, but it was kind of clunky because he missed most of the games. But I still really like him. And when I see Tatum play, I see a Porter Jr. being that kind of a skill level and contributor, although I think he's going to be gone way before the number 8 pick if that's where the Bulls end up, which looks pretty solid. But Mikal Bridges kind of reminds me a little bit, too, of an Andre Iguodala, but a better shooter. And when you were describing – kind of the prototype guy, wing guy in the league these days. I think he really fits the bill.
Amen. So now that you've had a chance to watch the tournament, I do want to throw a couple of these names out at you and ask you, has your opinion changed? I'm going to actually run through like a mock draft that's up right now, with the Suns taking DeAndre Ayton. I know you've watched him a little bit in the interim since our last show. Anything changed there? Anything you want to add on Ayton?
No, I still see him certainly as a top two or three, if not number one. He's a physical specimen, very impressive. It was really odd how poorly Arizona played in that first game of the tournament. I know you could point a finger at the uncertainty with Sean Miller and some of the scandal-related things, but something wasn't right with the chemistry and on that team with the talent they had. And you know, to get blown out by Buffalo was kind of surprising. I would say I was almost more surprised by that than the Maryland Baltimore County win over Virginia.
Yeah,
in some ways, because that game, that Buffalo Arizona game, was a high margin
blowout
down
too.
As well.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, as a pro, you know, I see him. He looks a lot like an Elijah Wan, Kevin Garnett, you know. Someone in that realm wouldn't surprise me if he got to that level.
Yeah, I mean, unless the Bulls win the win the lottery, they don't have a shot at getting him. And, you know, my only concerns about him are I don't think he looked good defensively. Every time I watched him, I had questions about why is this guy not better defensively? Why is he not having more of an effect on the game defensively? And I don't know what the reasons are for that. I just didn't think he blocked as many shots as he should have or kind of dominated on that end. But, I mean, he still is so young. And, you know, you can't teach 7 feet 260. Just can't teach it. I mean, he's an absolute, you know, specimen, as you put it, or a stud physically. And a guy like that is just, on that alone, is going to go top three with a nice little jumper.
Right. And with the, what I'll call the TV eyeball test is whenever Arizona, when I flipped on one of their games and was watching, it was very evident in seconds he was on the floor and having an impact on the game. Where when I watched Texas and Mo Bamba, I'm searching around, is he even on the floor? Is he in the game? Which one is he? You know, and
yeah.
So
yeah.
I know that's a little armchair quarterback kind of analysis, but that formula has worked for me pretty well over the decades when I've assessed players. So
yeah. Marvin Bagley. I've definitely come around a little bit on him. There's a couple red flags for me with Bagley. I can't stand poor free throw shooters. He's a 60% free throw shooter. He doesn't really have 3-point range, which is kind of what you want to see now for that type of player. But man, oh man, he looked good in some of those games. And I'm not really high in his defense either, but offensively, he's much quicker and much better than I expected him to be. I thought he made some really nice progress throughout the year.
Yes, I very, very sold on his skill level as well. I would say the thing that concerned me the most about him at Duke was he was almost being too unselfish, I thought, at times. Even in the Kansas game, there were a couple times where he got the ball, made a move in the paint, and I know the whole strategy for a lot of teams now is to drive and kick. But when you're Marvin Bagley, arguably the college player of the year, or certainly on the very, very short list for it, and your team is fighting for their lives against Kansas in the regional final, that you've got to take over. And you've got to have the mindset of, I get it in the paint, I'm going to shoot a sky hook, I'm going to take it to the rack, and they either dunk it or get fouled. And I just didn't see that. And not that he wasn't playing hard, but I just thought his decision-making, you know, I think that one of those distinctions in my mind of a good to great player is the great players sense at the point of the game where they need to take over.
Amen. I agree 100%.
A player I saw who's been projected as a late first round, early second round pick and some different things is Chandler Hutchison from Boise State. And I saw him play in person against San Diego State since we last talked. And, you know, he looks like he's got, you know, Kyle Kuzma-like skills, maybe even more skilled than a Kuzma, you know, in terms of size and being able to put the ball on the floor. But there were a number of times during the game where my intuition was, okay, here's where Hutchinson takes over. His teammates are looking for him to take on the the responsibility, right? Let me shoulder this and get us over the hump. And he just didn't do it. So just another player that's going to be talked about in some of the draft spots that in that comparison in terms of I want to see Bagley have that mindset of dominating. I see Bagley more of like a Chris Bosh type player, which is nothing wrong with that.
Exactly.
Yep.
Michael Porter Jr., I got to tell you, Tim, I was really disappointed in how he looked. I understand he's coming back, you know, but he came back to a team that was pretty good. I was actually more impressed with his brother, I'd say, over the course of the year. Has his kind of disappointing year changed your opinion at all, or do you still feel like he's going to be top five?
I'm kind of giving him a mulligan just because of the injury and, you know, and you're coming back for the conference tournament, and you know, when a lot's at stake for a lot of teams, even though they pretty much had a tournament spot, you know, in the bag, I would say. But I could see people being disappointed in how he played, but I'm still seeing him as a top five pick, and I'd seen enough of him and just whatever that little sparkle he has, also that's kind of an intangible thing that you know that I see like a Jason Tatum in him.
Gotcha. Mo Bamba, you gave a little 411 on him. I agree with you 100%. I think the guy is very, very limited offensively. And I kind of see like New Orleans Noel to me. That's what I see in him. And, you know, he's a great defensive player. That's something you're going to need. But I just don't see him being good enough offensively to warrant a top five draft pick, which he will.
I agree with you. I'm not sold of him. I sure hope the Bulls avoid him.
Yeah,
And especially with the way the league is trending now, you know, guys of Bamba's size and skill set, I just don't. I mean, I guess you could say, well, Clint Capella in Houston plays like that somewhat. So I hear you on that one, but I don't know. I just think, you know, just being a long shot blocker and defender, you know, I don't think he's got the size to do the pick and pop or the, you know.
Or the skill. He's nowhere nearly skilled to do that. Yeah, I know everybody's young, he'll develop it. I don't see it. I'm not high on him, and I want to see it pass. Luka Doncic.
Well, again, back to Bamba real quick, too. And another benchmark, I guess Ben Simmons has kind of proven me wrong on this one, but, you know, I kind of thought, if he's that good, why isn't their team better? Especially at the college level. And, you know, that there's a few players that come along every year where that crosses my mind. And you know, Texas had some pretty good players around him. You know, I see another name, later in some of these mock drafts. And, you know, they have some other talented kids. You know, Shaka Smart's highly renowned as a coach, although he hasn't really gotten it to the next level at Texas. But that's another thing I question about with Bamba.
How about Luka Doncic?
Yeah, nothing really new there other than just
you know, he shot 30% from three in Europe. I saw that, and I'm out.
That low.
I'm not in on that. You know, I think if for that kind of skill set, if you're not like an uber athlete, I understand he's 6'8". I understand he's young. He played at a high level there, right? Like, that to me is a must-have skill. If you're not, like, going to bring it defensively, which he never will be, and I have questions about who the heck he's going to guard in the NBA, and I understand he's a great facilitator, all that, you better be a good shooter. 30% from three is not good, you know, in Europe. It's not going to translate to the NBA. So
right, it's a shorter line, and you know what I have seen of him in highlights, and you know, and I like he shows some burstiness and seems to have a pretty dynamic game. But I also, when I see him, I think of maybe like a Peja Stojakovic, which again, very good player, probably, you know, not quite Hall of Fame level, but you know, something like that. Which
guys like
that kind of come along pretty regularly.
Peja was a fantastic shooter. Like, that's one thing about him that he brought. Like, I'm worried he's Ricky Rubio. I mean, he's taller than Ricky Rubio, right? So he's 6'9". That's going to help. But I just see, is he that much different than Ricky Rubio? And except worse defensively, probably a better overall playmaker and shooter and scorer. But, you know, I don't know. I definitely would pass on him for Jaren Jackson, who's the next one on the list. I love Jaren Jackson Jr., and I know he had a terrible, last game for Michigan State, but he hardly played. Blame that a lot on Izzo. I don't know what the heck happened there. But I love his defensive ability, and I think I've seen him, I've watched him quite a bit, probably more than any other player, show moments on the offensive end where I've said, oh my gosh, this guy has, you know, legit skills that will develop as he gets older.
Right. And, you know, I saw a player last night. I was at the Spurs at the Clippers game, and I could see Jackson developing into like a LaMarcus Aldridge type player. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if he's going to be able to shoot it quite that well, but, you know, similar kind of size and the way he moves on the floor.
Jackson's a better athlete, though.
I think probably so. Yeah, Aldridge, you know, I was commenting to my son last night at the game. I said, you know, he's always, Aldridge I'm talking about, always has kind of had an old man game.
Yes.
He kind of moved, kind of moved like an old guy, even when he was early on with Portland. And he had a great game last night, by the way. He had 35. So he's still doing it and carrying the load without Kawhi being there. I kind of come around a little bit on LaMarcus Aldridge. Now, I never was not a fan, but I know there was a little dissension, it seemed like, with him in San Antonio, but where he's had to carry the load this year with Leonard out most of the season. I've changed my attitude about him, and he was very impressive last night, although the Clippers made a dramatic comeback and beat the Spurs by 3.
Wow.
But Jackson, intriguing talent, you know, a lot of size, and he's one of those guys, using that Bamba example, when I'd flip on Michigan State, he was the guy that kind of popped off the screens, like, wow, this, he's got size, he's got skill, and you could tell he's still very, very raw and young.
Yes,
like him, I think somewhere in that, I wouldn't be surprised if he maybe went as high as 3 or 4, but you know, in the 5 to 8 range is probably realistic for him.
Yeah, so he's like an inch shorter than Mo Bamba, but he's 20 pounds heavier, and I think he's a better, he's got a bed, he's definitely has more offensive skill. I think his ceiling will be much higher than Bamba's on the offensive end. Bamba's great defensively. I think Jackson's great defensively. You know, he might not reach Bamba's heights. He might miss it on the defensive end, but offensively, Bamba's not going to ever come close to touching him. So if you're going to get him in the fall to the Bulls, that's a huge win. The next projection on this mock draft, if I'm looking at it, is Trae Young. I am not a believer in Trae Young's pro career. I think he's 5'11". I think he looks so small to me when I watch that kid play. And I know he's a great shooter, and I know he's got those offensive skills, highly skilled offensively. And the Bulls are the one of the few teams that could probably, you know, bring him in, because Dunn is so good in the backcourt. You could kind of pair those two up, and he could cover for his faults, kind of like how Heinrich did with Gordon, but on the defensive end. But, you know, I think there's better alternatives, and I think they're going to be better players than Trae Young.
Right. Well, when I looked at Trae Young, and then if you're looking at the same mock as I am, Colin Sexton, I kind of looped those two together. I think Trae Young has, you know, he's a better shooter, and there are some definite similarities to Curry in terms of style and how he plays. But as I was thinking this in terms of the Bulls and what kind of player the Bulls could have, I think the Bulls, if they're wanting a backup point guard or someone to be in the rotation, that they can get that player at 20 rather than use the 8th pick. I'm with you on going with someone like a Bridge.
How about the next one on the list I'm looking at is Wendell Carter from Duke, who I happen to love.
Yep, I like him as well. And, you know, as a 4 or 5 in today's game, I wouldn't have a problem at all with him. He seems to be kind of a glass eater. You know, he's around the rim, dunking the ball in traffic, you know, excellent rebounder. When he fouled out, I think that pretty much sealed Duke's fate there in that game against Kansas. So probably a little overshadowed by Bagley and Grayson Allen and some of the other Duke players. But I would be fine if he was there for the Bulls as well, potentially. So I'm a Wendell Carter fan.
The last guy we talked about, Mikal Bridges, the last guy I want to talk to you about, because he's got quite a bit of range here as far as people love him and hate him, is Kevin Knox from Kentucky. I'd like your 411 on him and whether or not you like him.
Well, I like he can score the ball, an excellent shooter, so someone that can stretch the defense. I would go with Bridges ahead of him. I've not seen enough of Knox, you know, in terms of defensively, and you know, when you kind of add in the total resume of you know, just the Villanova way, which, you know, Jay Wright's won 2 out of the last 3 championships, and Villanova seems to be in the hunt most of the time. So just having that Villanova certification, so to speak, gives a lot of bonus points in my mind. Also, I've seen some of Josh Hart for the Lakers as a backup guard, which, you know, more of a role player, but I think he helped make Jordan Clarkson expendable, and just his toughness and basketball IQ. And I think, again, back to Ron Bridges, I know you wanted me to talk about Knox, but, you know, so I would take someone like Bridges ahead of Knox, but I'm intrigued by Knox's ability to shoot the ball. I see him maybe as a Tobias Harris kind of a player who, a little fresh in my mind, because he had 30 some last night too against the Spurs. His decision making isn't always great. Tobias, I'm talking about, but he can really score the ball and shoot the ball, and that's a great skill to have. And I see Kevin Knox being a similar kind of player.
Gotcha. Yeah.
You're not as high on him?
Well, he's beloved by our good friend Keith Franz at Bull Scripted. And I am not. I like both Bridges better than him, but I will admit I have not watched enough of Knox. I need to spend more time on him to form a really solid opinion on him. I've watched a ton more of Bridges, Miles and Mikal. And, again, I prefer them based on what I've seen so far, but I've only probably seen maybe two games. And I really like to spend a lot more time just watching a player and before at least 5 to 6 games and as much video as you can before you kind of form an opinion.
Right.
So I got a little bit more work to do on him, but you know there are people who love the guy and think that he'll be a steal at that point. I'm excited because you know I know the world is just you know upset. Bulls Twitter is upset about the Bulls failing at tanking, and let's close on this one. You know, I still feel we're going to get a good player there, number one. And number two, in everybody's anger, they've kind of failed to notice how good Lauri Markkanen has been in the last month. And he's had several games in limited minutes where he scored 20-plus and just tearing it up. And at 20, he's already, to me, showing signs of developing to be, you know, that number one option. And I was really impressed with the pick-and-pop three-point shot that he had going on. I was at the game on Sunday against the Wizards, and they made the Wizards look like a G League team when he was out in the court. And he's been positive. I think the Bulls have had 6 wins since March 2nd. And every one of those games, he's been at like a +7 or higher, +19, just playing really well. Love to get your take on the comments about the Bulls failing in general to tank, and then also Lauri's performance lately.
Right. Well, it's an awkward place to be, and the Bulls are winding up. I'm just looking at the standings, and they've won 3 of their last 10. Right. So they're 3-7 in their last 10, which is kind of the pace I thought that they would be playing at. But there's been some peaks and valleys around that. And then there's been times where they've intentionally kept guys out, whatever they want to call it. But, you know, games where Lopez and Holiday didn't play for, you know, long stretches of time. And we talked earlier on in the season about how valuable Lopez seemed to be for Markkanen on a number of levels and that combination on the court. So, you know, I think the kind of players we're talking about that, and I'm not sure, are the Bulls, I guess a few things still need to work out. Are they pretty much locked in at, what, either 7, 8, or 9, somewhere right in there, no matter what happens these last few games, or is that determined yet?
Well, no, yeah, it's probably, yeah, it could be anywhere. If they get lucky and lose a 2 to the Nets, they could be as low as 6, but you know, right
yeah.
now,
well,
then, probably
yeah, of course, more, they yeah. could get lucky with the ping pong balls too. But
yeah,
but if things kind of fall how they will, so I think we've talked
probably
about
ninth.
Enough players that there's, you know, I think there's a half dozen players, maybe 4 to 6 players that I'd be very happy with the Bulls getting in that range, and I think all of you know, one of some of those numbers would be available there. So I think. You know, let's try to win out and give these young guys a little more of a chance to develop. I've loved Markkanen since the beginning. You know, little glimpses in summer league, and then the way he played to start the season. And it's not just his shooting; I always was high on that and impressed with how he played as a freshman at Arizona when the Pac-12 wasn't so good this year. But with the year Markkanen played, with you know Lonzo Ball and Leaf and Oregon going to the Final Four, and you know a lot of very good players and some of those teams that made the NCAA this year, like Arizona State, were kind of on the rise. So how he played against that level of competition, I was pretty sold on him coming out of college. But the things beyond the shooting, that just his defensive awareness and effort, his ability to put the ball on the floor on occasion, I think the sky's the limit for him. I'm thrilled that he's a Bull.
Amen. Well, Tim, hey, thanks for jumping on. It's always good to talk to you, brother. So glad to have you. And looking forward to having you on many times in the upcoming months as we go through the playoffs and then, of course, to the big spot for the Bulls, the NBA draft. All the best to you, brother.
Okay, Fred, same to you. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, Tim. Bye-bye.